Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Well, we are just a couple of minutes away from going green for this 1 hour and 30 minute session. The photographers are going to love this tonight because there's just enough cloud cover to get some great sunset shots. And there's still just enough light in the sky as well as the cars are lining up. Let's square a couple of circles and find out what was going on in the previous session. We didn't see either of the Multimatic Ford Mustangs. They were sitting back in the paddock, didn't even come onto the pit lane. First CrowdStrike pit lane report of this session is Nick Damon with Mike Rockefeller.
Yeah, just going to meander across the massive, very high up in this pit perch. Mike, so you've actually decided to come out and do some work now.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, we love to race here, especially in the night. And the cars look good, and hopefully we have a clean session.
So how come when every other one of the 58 entries were pounding round, the two Multimatic Fords didn't bother? What's the reason for it?
I mean, we had some stuff to do, and we decided not to run this session and focus on the night session now, and obviously focus on the race. That was just a decision we made as a team.
Saving tyres?
Fuel.
You can't shrug on the radio.
No, I mean, obviously it's a long race, and we are still trying to learn the car, and you know, it's a process, obviously, and it was very hot in the session, and you know, we like to stay in the cool truck, and now we are back out.
I understand that. Obviously, it was very warm. But as a driver, do you feel you've missed out by not getting an extra half hour or 45 minutes on the track?
No. I mean, we have, all of us in this team have been here many, many times. And, we know the place. That's no problem. We have been testing here a few weeks ago. So I think we know the track. But obviously, all the time you are driving, like now, I think this race usually is decided at the end of the race, right? And the track is changing because it gets a lot cooler. So that's what we are saying. You know, we need to focus on those conditions.
So will all three of you have a run in the car for the whole 90 minutes?
Yes.
That's good. Harry's in the car, by the way. Chris is just sitting very quiet. Just making sure. Are you right? How's it going, Chris? You all right? How's it going, Chris?
They can't hear you.
That's because these V8s just taken off with Chris Meese with the team. But I mean, Mike's very unconcerned by the loss of the practice time. Are you equally unconcerned?
Oh yeah, I mean, we had a nice lunch. We enjoyed the sun a little bit. So it's actually cool to be here. I mean, weather is good. People are insane. If you go around the track, it's unbelievable how many spectators are here already. So no, it was cool to have some time off.
Great thing. Thanks. Everyone on message here about it. It's lovely to be in the sun and have a nice lunch.
Let's check in with Shea Adam before we go too much further. The other half of our CrowdStrike pit lane team getting a little bit cooler, but not much. Officially, still 28 Celsius at the moment. That's 82 in the air, 79 on the track. That'll start to come down very quickly, I would suggest. There'll be residual heat in there, but there's not been sunshine directly on it for a little while. What's going on at your end of the pit lane, Shay?
I'm just noticing that there are several drivers down here that are already suited and booted, even though their cars are out on track, because there's going to be driver change practice, namely happening down here at WTR Andretti, where the number 10, the shiny Konica Minolta car, it's got Ricky Taylor behind the wheel right now, but it looks like Philippe Albuquerque's going to be jumping in here soon.
Got a problem right off the bat. We'll discuss who's got to be out there and who hasn't. Sean Creech, Motorsport, and the only leash in LMP2, Johnny Edgar in the 32, is dead stick out on the circuit. This, I'm sure, with no lights even on that car, this will bring a red flag pretty quickly out. He has got about halfway to the hairpin, and that's all. So he's not even got down to turn seven, sitting on driver's right. Actually, check that. He's got out of turn seven. He's recycling now. He's turned everything off. The interior lights have gone off as well. Three-finger salute. Control-Alt-Delete. GT car coming up behind him with the yellow lights. Listed as turn eight. He's getting one running light on at the front, but nothing else. There's a red light on the left-hand side front of the car. But right now, that car is being somewhat recalcitrant. The onboard lights in the cabin have just come back on again. But that isn't great for Johnny Edgar and the rest of the Sean Creech Motorsport team. Ploughing a different furrow with the Ligier in LMP2. With 44 cars out on the pits. Out of the pits. Still green at the moment. Clearly, and now the red flag comes out. I was just about to say, clearly the team are in contact with race control. Tony out with the red flag. Suggest that the team were talking to race control there, saying, give us a second, we might get this started. Now, let's get this out of the way before anything else. We have got pictures thanks to NASCAR Productions and our intrepid camera operators all around the circuit. Thank you for that, so we can see. And I can tell you that on driver's right heading up to turn three, there are more illuminated palm trees than I've ever seen on that compound before. They've really pushed the boat out this year. I'm tremendously impressed. And we'll get a shot of that. They've spread with multicoloured trunks on those cars, now down two sides of their encampment. And you can see them over it. They see the green over in the distance. Beautiful Etruscan orange glow just left in the sky over towards the west of here, with a bit of cirrus cloud just reflecting that, and looks absolutely superb. Big thank you to all of our production staff, particularly our camera operators, who've had a very long day today. Be over 13 hours by the time we get to it. And to the production staff up in Concord, in their shiny new production facility. Has that new production facility smell still, I'm sure. As well as the techs who have worked hard to rig everything here before we got here. In particular, thank you, Christine, who has sorted our booth out, as well as our dedicated producers for the One Mech series. Alyssa was on duty this afternoon. And I know he won't be listening, but because he's got other duties at the moment with an impending addition to the family. But thank you very much to Alex and the rest of his team, and good luck with the arrival of the newborn. But thanks to Matt Roper and his squad as well at Concord, who once again, with Keith D'Alessandro, Jim Nabte, and all of the other hard workers there, have made sure that we've been able to talk to you. And what's more, we can see what's going on around the circuit. Not just here, it's the little things right across the weekend that is really helpful. And it's been Hugh and Tim up in London today as well. Let's have another update from Shea Adam with this CrowdStrike pit lane. Again, cars that have had problems earlier in the day, Shea?
The one that's actually caused this red flag right now is the number 33 Sean Creech Motorsport Ligier. It was a fuel pressure alarm that came on the dashboard, and then it all just kind of crashed. So the car is flat towing. That's the good news. They will get it back to the pit lane, and hopefully it's just one of those things that they can push a very quick control up delete, and then Johnny Edgar can get back out. But they did have Lance Wilsey with his helmet on, ready to go, and he has since taken it off. So perhaps going to give himself a little bit more breathing space for the crew to diagnose what's wrong with the car.
We never got to the bottom of why the number one Paul Miller Racing car didn't go out in that second session either. Whether that was the first session it was for them, whether that was planned or a problem. They did go out in the second session and turn some meaningful laps, Jeremy. I've never seen so many cars not going out in particularly the first session. I can't believe that that wasn't anything other than some kind of issue one or two.
It could well have been looking after the tires, because they do have, as Sherry Adam was saying earlier on this afternoon, there is a limited amount of tires they're able to use for the entire weekend here for GTD. I think it was 16 sets, is what she said in total.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
For the looking at my notes here for the weekend, so it could well have been. I mean, Paul Miller Racing certainly is one of the teams that often does not go out in the warm up for kind of that reason. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was the same as the Proton Fords, which was, despite Rocky's best attempts there, that was the reason they were not out in that second session this afternoon. What a politician he is! Brilliant. That's why he's employed. He says the right things. And we can kind of read between the lines, but yeah, it was looking after the supply of tyres while the Fords didn't go out. Anyway, they know they're not right on the front running pace there with a brand new car for this season, and so there's a steep learning curve for them. And they've done a fair bit of testing here. They're properly prepared going to the race. They know where they stand in relation to everybody else, and missing a session for them really wasn't an issue at all. At least a negative issue at all.
One of the other cars that did have a problem earlier on that we're chasing down, as Catherine Legg told us, was the Gradient Acura NSX, but they did some laps as well. Tatiana Calderon easing herself in rather nicely to that, and we hear from the team that they will be going out in this session, so we'll need to keep an eye on that. That car did have pace at Daytona till they had a problem partway through the race. And there, Catherine's saying we don't really know where we stand as yet. Hopefully they'll get a bit better.
Anybody does, quite frankly.
No, I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right, Jeremy. Shea Adams going to put her head in her hands here, because we've got her leaving the pit box too early for the number 11 Orica. Stephen Thomas behind the wheel of that machine.
There's a total of 55 drivers that must go out and complete their mandatory three laps during this night session in order to be able to be eligible to drive at night during a race. But with the time shift in the race now starting at 9:40 in the morning, therefore finish at 9:40 in the evening, there's going to be less than 2 hours of full dark driving. So that's most likely just going to be one of each of the drivers in each of the cars that are going to need to drive at night time.
It's a fair point. Well, mate, we're going to try and cycle through as many of the teams as we can in this hour and a half session. Nick Damon working that end of the pit lane has Nico Faron.
Nico, I suppose the first thing I have to say is, obviously after the problems that AWA had with the new Corvettes at Daytona, have you got to the bottom of all those problems? Are you convinced those problems won't come back?
Yeah, well, actually, we didn't have a really smooth 24 at Daytona, first race for the car, for the team. So we knew it was going to be tough. Brad Miller and AWA have been working behind the scenes really hard all these days, all these months. And I think so far so good. We are having a good day, no issues, everything running smooth. So I'm confident for the race.
I say new car, new track for the new car. I mean, has it come together well? Do you feel you've got a setup that's going to work for the car?
Yeah, I mean, Sebring is always known that Corvette is always strong, and I feel like we have a great car. It's a 12-hour race, so we need a lot of consistency. But so far, we are happy with the balance. For sure, you always need to tweak some stuff, but yeah, we are looking strong.
And do you share information with the Pratt Miller team, with the works team?
Well, that's the best part. You know, we have all the info from the pro car, so yeah, that's a big help for us. And we are always, after the session, having the data, so we know, we have a base to start and to work on. And if we go maybe too far to one side, we can come back. So that's a good really relationship between Pratt Miller and AWA.
And what's the program for this evening? What's the run program for this evening?
So now Thomas and Anthony are doing their mandatory laps, and then I will get in to test the car, how react to the night, because we know here that the balance changes a lot. From daytime to nighttime, so I will be doing the end of the race. So yeah, mostly check everything is okay, maybe do some changes and get everything ready for the race.
Nico, thank you much.
Nico Faron, the Argentinian-Italian, two flags on his race suit. Met him first properly at Le Mans 24 hours last year when he was driving with Ben Keating so effectively. He was here at Daytona last year as well when he won. I had a meaningful conversation with him at Le Mans, and what a talent he is, and what an individual he is. Very much a thinking driver, and has plugged into a couple of different teams now and not caused any trouble, not upset the balance of anything, and it's just been actually rather quick.
Yeah, very, very quick, and as you say, a great head on his shoulders. That was a really strong interview there. You know, English isn't his first language, but you wouldn't know it from listening to him there. Really good interview with Nick Daman, and yeah, he's a guy who's really established himself a couple of years ago. You know, who is this guy? Well, now everybody knows who he is. He's had a lot of success in a short period of time, and he's going to be around the sport for a long time.
Accident in the pit lane. Shay Adam contacts.
Yeah, James Hinchcliffe just left the pit box for Pfaff Motorsport. He was in the transition lane, minding his own business, and the TDS number 11 Orica turned clear into the car and actually clipped the tail. So the left rear of the Pfaff McLaren should have a little bit of damage. I'm going to keep an eye on that for when they come back into the pit lane. But that was just an incident where clearly the 11 did not know that there was a car in the transition lane and turned across anyway.
Once again. It's
exactly what you don't need to happen, though, Jeremy, at this stage.
Yeah, true. Thankfully, not too much contact with the pier. So some lap times beginning to come through here. The fastest time we've seen so far today was set by Phil Hansen in the number 85 JDC Miller Motorsports Porsche 963 in the afternoon session. 148.149, and the quickest time we've seen so far in this session, just five laps completed, and really only a couple since we went back to green after early full course yellow or red flag, I should say, is a 1:51.6. That's Matthew Jaminet in number 6 Porsche, just ahead of the number 31 Cadillac, number 7 Porsche in third place, so it's top three covered by half a second. LMP2, Toby Sowry carrying on the good work from this afternoon for CrowdStrike by APR, car number 04. He's quickest in LMP2 at the moment by about a second over Connor Zilish in car number 18, the Ira Motorsport car which won the opening round of the season at Daytona.
Well, we said we were going to keep an eye on the times, and we will. But they don't count for anything now except to give us an idea about who might be quick in the last couple of hours of the race tomorrow. Lamborghini SC63 going slowly for a moment. Turn 3. I think that car might have been off the track there. It's back on now. Things happening very quickly down at pit level. Nick Daman just about to jump in for an interview there, and drivers being called away at very short notice to get in the car. Distinctive light signature on the back of the SC63 with the TIE fighter rear lights, I'm going to call of those. Now, Nick's driver is not now required in the car, so or have you just dragged him out of it, Nick, and told him, no, you're not driving, you have to speak to me?
He appears to be having a wardrobe malfunction. He's not in a Jack Jackson way, but he's not over his pocket. It's definitely Francesco out the 7840 Lamborghini. Devin, you're having a good old go at your overalls there. What's the problem?
Just getting it ready for the cool suit. It's quite warm in these things, so the cool suit makes life easier.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, whilst it is dark, the humidity's come up, and actually it's probably less comfortable, I would think, in the car and to move around than it was through the middle of the day.
Yeah, it does get quite warm. I mean, the chill-out system works quite well, so it's nice to have that on board and help keep you fresh for a longer period of time.
So tell me about this this 40 Lamborghini. How is it going? How is it suiting the bumps of Sebring?
Very well, actually. Through the day today, we were able to make quite a few changes on a few different things, and the car just keeps getting better and better all the time, so I'm really looking forward to the race and the rest of the weekend.
There are several Lamborghini Huracan GT3s now in the field. I know you're separate teams, but is there any sort of central pool of information that perhaps comes to Lamborghini, or are you all out there on your own doing your own thing?
No, obviously there are things that we share between the Lamborghini teams to a certain extent. But at the same time, we are racing against them to go and get the best result possible. But it's always good, you know. Each team is supported very well by Lamborghini, and it's up to us to do the best we can for the brand and represent the brand at the top level.
It seems like this will be quite a busy session. Are you going to do a lot of rotation of drivers through the car during these 90 minutes?
Yep, no, for sure. I'll be in next. That's why you saw me scurrying to get ready. So Loris is in the car now. I think I'll jump in to do a few laps, and then Misha will jump in to probably finish off.
Devin, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just looking at some times also in GTD. Fastest of the cars in GTD, and again, it's a non-pro car that's quickest. It's number 47, a pro driver, though. Antonio Fuoco in the Cetelar Ferrari. It's turned a 2:09.91. Well, that's quicker than that car's gone so far today.
Yeah.
So he wasted no time in getting up to speed. Second fastest, or he's actually just been picked by James Collado, has moved up to be fastest in a GTD Pro in the Risi Ferrari at a 2:01.7. Then a 2:01.9. That's Harry Tingnell in one of those Proton Run Multimatic Run Ford Mustangs, the cars that sat out this afternoon session. And that time by Harry Tingnell, a 2:01.9, that's within a half a second of that car's best time set this morning. So that's a pretty stout lap in the early stages in that Ford Mustang. The sister car, Joey Hand, is not far behind either in the top five in GTD Pro.
You made a point there, Jeremy, about a pro driver in a GTD, i.e. a pro AM car. There's no difference to the BOP. There's no difference to the potential performance of any of the cars. So the Cetelar Racing GTD car runs to exactly the same performance parameters as James Collado's Risi Competizione GTD Pro car, and the Corvettes between GTD Pro and GTD the same. All of the cars are exactly the same, and it's purely the makeup of the driver team that decides whether that car's in GTD Pro or GTD, unless the team wants to be in Pro. And that has happened before. But the point is that there's no reason why a non-pro car can't be quickest, particularly when it's got a good driver, a pro driver in it.
There's a couple of cars that were running in GTD Pro at Daytona that didn't have to.
And, correct.
Particularly number 60, Iron Lynx Lamborghini. That's got a bronze driver, Claudio Schiavone, sharing with Matteo Cristina and Leonardo Pulcini. That would be eligible for GTD non-pro, but they elected at Daytona, as again here at Sebring, to run in the pro class.
CrowdStrike Pit Lane Report down here with Tommy Sunset. Tommy Milner, you've developed that nickname over the years, a long-running joke with Jordan Taylor, but is there anything better than racing at Sebring after the sun has set and then it's just night?
Yeah, the key word there is after the sunset, because everything leading up to that is difficult. Of all the racetracks, this one has the best sunset, as long as you're not in the race car, because driving down to 17 here is hard, for sure. But just part of the character of Sebring, part of what makes this race so special. And excited to be back here again.
You know how to win this race. It's been a couple years since you did it, but it's fun to think that guys that you want it with are in the field but in other cars. I mean, it's interesting to see all the former Corvette drivers that have sort of dispersed throughout. Do you enjoy racing against them?
That depends who it is. If it's Jordan Taylor and he's blowing my doors off now in that GTP car, not so much. But no, I mean, all the guys that, you know, I just saw Jan today. I saw him and talked to him for a long time. So, had some great memories here with Corvette Racing, and hopefully we can make some more here this weekend.
It seems like the Ford Corvette, though, with Nick Katzberg and Noel Bamber joining you, you guys have a really good vibe about you. Have you become really good friends that quickly already?
I mean, I'm going to joke here a little bit. I didn't want to be friends with Bamber because I raced against him for so long. I am joking. But he's a great guy, super easy to get along with, super fast in a race car. you know, I've raced against him for so many years and one of the worst guys to race against. This has happened a lot in my career. When I first joined Corvette, one of the worst guys to race against was Olivier Barreto, and he was my teammate. Oliver Gavin, same way. So just continuing on this trend of you know, guys that have been big pains in the butt on the racetrack to drive, but they're a pain in the butt because they're always so fast, so good. And, yeah, like you said, I have two great teammates. Nicky's been awesome. I mean, he's been a part of the team now for a few years, but working with him now as a full-time co-driver has been really good. Great guy. And Earl's no different. He's up to speed right away as expected. And we all definitely gel well. We all kind of want the same from the race car. So it's been an easy transition.
It's a bit of a rare occurrence in GTD Pro where all three of the drivers in the car have previously won the 12 Hours of Sebring. You guys have that under your belt. How is Corvette Racing going to have any advantage in this field, in this race?
Yeah, these days there's not much advantage to be had anymore. You know, it seemed like in years past, some of the pit stop stuff that we did here at Corvette Racing was better than anybody else, and a lot of other teams have caught up. You know, all the little tricks that we've used over the years, I think, have been caught on to now, so it's super close, super competitive. It's a lot of fun to go racing. You know, last year was a little bit of a, let's say, not traditional finish. It seems like usually the racing's close, but a little bit more respectful in some ways, just the nature of it. There was, I think it was, what, nine cars in the lead lap still, all racing for the win. So I don't imagine it being much different this year. I'm sure it'll be similar to last year. So I know Antonio's got his eyes wider open from previous years. From watching that, you know, I certainly do as well. So I'm excited. Like I said, Daytona, the racing was from start to finish. I've never had a race like that where you're in a battle all race long. And again, I expect the same here.
Good luck this weekend, Tommy.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Never not entertaining. Tommy Milner, behind the wheel or in front of a microphone?
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant stuff. Been around a long time. Absolute product of his upbringing as well. Great family background. And
yeah, his dad was a pain in the arse as well.
I loved his dad.
Yeah, he's great fun.
Very interesting story to Tom Milner Sr. What he did in his early life. Spent many happy days drinking coffee with him in the ELMS days and talking about his days working in diplomacy in Washington and places like that. Very interesting fella. And his son does him proud, no doubt about that. Neither of the Acura GTP cars have been out, pit lane team. That might be a plan. Shea is already, even as I speak, heading, that was a quick U-turn, for handbrake turn from Shea Adam, our CrowdStrike pit lane reporter. Nick Dearman, where are you?
I'm with the 86, the MGK Porsche, with Anders Fjordback. Anders, the car's currently in the pits. Is that anything specific? I know they had all four wheels off and were looking at the brakes.
No, just trying to dial in the car for the night. It's a bit, quite a big difference in temperature. Yeah, you felt it yourself, I guess.
12-hour race. Is this a brake change race? Will the GT3s be changing brakes, do you think?
I hope not. Depend a bit how the race follow pans out, but I think like we should be able to go through. But there is a performance loss, so some teams might change at the end, so they have a bit better brakes.
I suppose it depends on where the yellows fall, yeah?
Exactly, that's it.
So how do you feel the performance of your GT3 Porsche is compared to the others? Have you got on top of this car now?
Yeah, I think so. I think we learned quite a lot last year. We raced it in Europe. And I think also, like in general, the BOP and everyone started to understand the Porsche better now. So I'm pretty confident that we will have a good season.
It's interesting that you're partnered with Klaus Backler and Caron Lee. Caron, the least experienced, but Caron isn't going to be driving today. This evening, he's in his civvies. Why are you only rotating the two of you?
So it will only be a couple of hours dark in the race, and it's only me and Klaus that might race during night. So he's taking it easy tonight.
He's having a rest and a nice can of Coke.
Yeah, exactly.
Best luck, Anders.
Yeah, thank you very much. You too.
Well, the Acura update you asked for, John, I can give you an update on one of the two GTP Acuras, because the 40, that's the red one with the Dex Imaging sponsorship, is nowhere to be seen. But the number 10 is in its box. That's the shiny blue Konica Minolta livery. That one, they're working in the pedal box, and it is Philippe Albuquerque who's now behind the wheel. Managed to pull that one back in nice and quickly. They are working in the pedal box, but they are also examining what appears to be the brakes on the front on both sides. They were just looking at the right front. Now they're moving over to the left front, but it is something within the pedal box because they've actually pulled that little slot off of the front. So it says number te, because it's about half of the zero, so it's not quite the 10. And Philippe Albuquerque has his feet pulled up a little bit because I can see his knees.
Thank you, Shea. Nice save there as well. Just managed to pull that one back. Pit lane speed violation warning for BMW GTP number 24. Earlier on talking about our partners at Sacred Coffee. And a brand new dark roast coffee of motorsport, roasted in the North Carolina roast house in small batches, hand roasted it is. It's called 963, and perfect to keep you up whilst watching motorsport.
Hey, if you're watching motorsport, you shouldn't be going to sleep.
Well, no, indeed, that's true. But you prepare well, don't you? It's all about the preparation. 963 is the name of it. So you know where that's got the linkage from Tubbs and the guys at Sacred Coffee Sport. You go to sacredpodusa.com and search out for 963. At the moment, in the USA, two big bags for $40 and free shipping to the US. That's a US only offer at the moment around the Sebring. Get in there quick. Special dark roast from the North Carolina Roast House, hand roasted in small batches. SacredPodUSA.com and just search out 963. Dark roast, hashtag coffee of motorsport. 1 hour to go.
Yeah, boy, that half hour went fast.
Whoosh!
Sheesh, man.
This has been happening to me a lot lately, yeah, about how motor races have disappeared very quickly. The 12 hours of Bathurst, just Garth Tander and I were in the booth at the end looking at each other going, are we sure that was 12 hours? That was six, wasn't it? It was only 6 hours. We could keep going. And I've got a feeling we're going to have a race like this on Saturday. Remember, the race is Saturday. It's the 72nd running. Mobile 1, 12 hours of Sebring, presented by Cadillac. 9:40 green flag. We're on the air with the Michelin Countdown to Green at 9 o'clock Eastern, which is daylight saving version of Eastern at the moment. So it's sprung forward an hour for those of you outside the US. Please take that into account. You do not want to miss the build-up at the start of this race. We'll have our CrowdStrike pit lane reporters Nick and Shay out there speaking to the drivers. Jeremy will do the rundown. Our Porsche keys to the race as well. We'll wrap up everything that we've seen from qualifying tomorrow, as we'll have the grid set at tomorrow lunchtime. Have that live for you in sound and vision, whether you're here in the US or further afield. So plenty of action to come as we're rounding up the Thursday thunder this evening in this next hour. Tomorrow, starting much later in terms of the on-track activity, but going on into the evening with races going into the gloaming tomorrow night for Porsche. And we'll have that for you live in sound and vision as well. CrowdStrike pit lane reporters working from opposite ends of the pit lane, and Nick Damon has moved up another pit box or two.
Yes, to the bright yellow and blue of Turner Motorsport and Patrick Gallagher from the 96. Somehow it's going with the BMW. It's a slightly different car than that was running around in Daytona. And how are you finally setting it up?
Yeah, the Turner Motorsports guys have the car hooked up. We're just, you know, this race ends at night, so this night practice is pretty important. We'll see how we stack up here. But they've done a good job getting it ready, and it's a pleasure to drive around here, honestly. It's a step forward from what we had last year. We finished second with a little bit of strategy, but I hope we have the speed this year to put it up front, hopefully for the whole race.
There are a huge number of M4 GT3s running around in so many series. Now WEC to add everything else. How much information do you get back from BMW Central from what those other teams have learned?
Yeah, I mean, all the BMW engineers that are over there, I think, end up over here in some capacity, and there's a lot of information that can be shared, what's relevant based on what tire they're on. But, you know, anything that they learn, we certainly take and try and use it over here and see if it works in the IMSA. You know, the tracks are very different, but a lot of the system stuff does translate over for sure.
We've seen a few of the other GT3 teams elect not to come out for sessions or miss half a session, we believe, because they're worried about tire allocation. Is that a big concern for you guys?
Yeah, I think everybody's saving tires at some point in one way or another, right? Our allocation's down from last year with this new tire. It's meant to last longer. I don't know if we can double them or not. We haven't had our strategy meeting yet. So I think everybody's saving tires to some degree. But, yeah, it's certainly, you know, we came here and tested, so we have a good baseline and just confirm that the car's good, and then we go from there and have sets to put on every time we hit the box in the race.
So what's the program for the rest of the evening for the 96?
Yeah, I'm going to get in and make some laps at night. And, man, it's always so much fun to drive around here at night. We do it at the test, but to see all the campers and all the lights and stuff, this is one of my favorite laps to Sebring at night. So I'm super excited to get in the car and just hope that our Turner Motorsport BMW M4 GT3 is fast and put the Belhaven car up front.
So how long did it take you to get used to the nights? Your previous stint was in the day, 2 hours later in the night. I mean, how quickly did you get, you know, you re-establish those braking markers and everything else?
Yeah, it's a bit easier if you go through the transition from day to night and it changes little by little, but in reality it takes a couple corners, but you don't have a couple corners, so once you've done it a couple times it comes quick, but your first time doing it, your eyes wide open for sure.
Now this track, of course, is very different from many others because there's a fairground right next to it with all the RVs and the parties and the barbecues and everything else. I know you wouldn't find it distracting as a professional racing driver, but do you find it kind of moves those visual cues you need, or do you have to be careful not to take a visual cue of something that might move?
Yeah, I think it's just all auxiliary, kind of off in the distance, at least until the race is over and they start burning stuff in turn seven, you know? I remember last 2 years they lit couches and cars and stuff on fire, so I don't know.
Patrick, you've just been cool, mate. Thanks for talking to us.
Awesome, thank you.
Well, down with a rookie to the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring, Maddie Rabham. Maddie, it's weird to think, with all the laps you've driven around here, night is a new thing.
Yeah, it is, and it's a totally new thing compared to Daytona. Daytona was was easy, and then I got out here, and I'm like, where are the corners? Where do I go? I got to, like, look down the track map and remember where I am.
Just wait until we get to Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta at the end of the year. That place is really dark, too. But this race, so much traffic, it's a little bit of chaos. Have you experienced that so far?
Yeah, I went out, and during the day it wasn't so bad, but I think everyone's missing the corners because I can't see them tonight because there's just dust everywhere. Every corner was different. There was gravel, there's dirt, and especially with these LMP2 cars, the air conditioning is just the front aero and the air that comes through the front. And so every time I go through the grass, I get a mouthful of grass and dirt, and it's hard when you got dirt in your eyes and it's dark like this. It's definitely difficult to see, but no, it's so much fun out there. I'm having a blast.
That's a great natural deterrent if you're getting personally affected every time you go off the racetrack to stay on it.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know how it is because I haven't been off yet in the grass, but hopefully the drivers that are going off are getting a mouthful of dirt for themselves so they know how it feels.
This race is so magnificent and it's so legendary. You've been a part of legendary 12 hours before. You won Bathurst in class a long time ago, not that long, but still, being a part of this race finally, does it mean something to you? Does it give you the goosebumps?
It is. It's the first racetrack I ever raced at in the U.S. and obviously the history with my dad. I look up and I can see all the Japanese flags with Nissan when my dad was racing and winning all those races. It's special. It gives you that feeling of tingles and your hair stands up and the goosebumps and the history and the stories of my family here are just incredible. So I hope I can put those under my belt, learn from when I was a little kid and listen to those around the dinner table and apply it this weekend and get some good results.
Yeah. I know the feeling very well. My dad, two times a winner here, too. So it does mean a little bit more when you got that family lineage. As you might be able to hear, we've gone to a red flag. It's gotten a little bit quieter. I do want to ask Matty, though. PJ Hyatt has come so far in IMSA racing, and he's now done 10 races. He's never been on the podium. How much do you guys want that for PJ?
I mean, we got to do it for PJ. I mean, he's obviously given us a great opportunity here with both cars to have a good run here this weekend. And he was on pole in Asian Le Mans, and I think he's got so much potential. And Paul, my teammate, and I have been obviously coaching and going over the data with him, and we see that he has no fear whatsoever. So we just got to rein him back a little bit and get him to do a clear lap, and I think he's going to be a contender for pole. I mean, he proved it in Asia, got the pole there, and yeah, I mean, obviously no expectations. It's a learning year for all of us, but no, we think once he gets comfortable and he's rolling in the laps and clicking them off and not making any mistakes, that he's going to be one of the contenders, and especially one of the fastest drivers in the bronze category for sure.
Good luck to you all this weekend.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, appreciate it. Cheers.
Down at the 52 pit, that's the interior pole P2 car, the car we believe was involved in at least 50% of this red flag with some side-to-side contact. There is certainly some dirt on the tyres. I'm now on the right-hand side. Let me quick look. There's no obvious massive scuffage, but the engineers know he's been hit. They're having a good old look around, and it is showing that customary dusty dirt that has been off the track, but no apparent damage, John.
Thank you, Shea and Nick, our CrowdStrike pit lane reporters there. I didn't ID the car that had the side-to-side contact, Jeremy, did you?
With number 52, you mean? No, I was not sure. There was a whole gaggle of cars there heading into the carousel at turns 4 and 5 there. Tom Dillman was driving the PR1 into Europol, number 52. Let's have a look if we can see in here. So he's on the... certainly contact between
that's a GT
two cars.
Car.
I think it well, the BMWs is in there
GT,
as well.
And then there's a Porsche
BMW
on the
prototype.
Yeah, a BMW prototype, excuse me. Yeah. Then a Porsche GT in the middle, which I think was sort of shunted into Tom.
Yeah.
And I thought they'd done a radiator on the left-hand side because there's so much stuff coming out of the left-hand side. But I think that's just a whole load of sand that he's picked up.
Yeah, I think you're right. He just turned his best lap of this session, which was sixth quickest in MP2. So he was pushing on there, but there's a huge gaggle of cars. There's four or five cars within about two or three cars' length. So it was a bit dodgy there, but hopefully no major damage to that car. I think that's the only...
It was Jesse Kron and Max Martin who were out in the BMWs. And it was the 24 car of Jesse Kron.
Number 86 here.
And it is the 86 Porsche.
It's the car in front of that, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, so the BMW wasn't involved. Great work by the tape apes. So it was the number 80, which is the AMG Mercedes. Great work by the tape apes getting the onboard up. Thank you, ladies and gents. So that was Sally Jolic, the Turkish driver for Lone Star. That was involved in that side-by-side contact.
He was kind of minding his own business. He was.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't anywhere where he shouldn't have been, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. But that's the sort of incident you'll have round here in some of these pinch points, Jeremy.
It is, particularly with a couple of guys there. Neither Tom Dillman nor Sally Jolic have got much experience around here racing at Sebring, particularly not at night time. It's the first time for both of them in this event. So, you know, going around the outside of the carousel, yeah, that's a dodgy place.
Now, did Sally Jolic do WEC round here? I don't think he did.
He might have done, actually. Good point.
No, I don't think he did.
Tom Dillman.
Tom did. Tom did WEC, I think, round here. But I think that was before Sally.
Sorry, he would have been here the last couple of years, wouldn't he? Good point, actually.
Yeah, I'm doubting myself now. We're back to green very quickly. It's going to be very dusty offline at turn 4, heading into turn 5 under the Corvette Bridge. Just on 49 minutes still to go. IMSA Radio live from trackside. Mobile 1, 12 hours of Sebring at the weekend. And this is free practice 3 for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. The dark session, the evening session, if you will. It is a waxing crescent moon tonight, if you can see it anywhere. We've been here last weekend. There was a super moon on the 10th. Super full moon on the 10th. Down to around about just 20% of the moon visible or so by Saturday. And sunset Saturday at 7:35. We kicked this session off about 10 minutes after that, and it was already pretty dark. So we're going to have the better part of 2 hours of racing to 9:40 on Saturday night, 9:40 p.m. local time Saturday night. So 2 hours in the dark, or at least the gloaming and then the dark. I keep forgetting how rapidly cars come up on through turn one and catch up to cars exiting the pit lane here. Nothing wrong with what anybody's doing. Waxing crescent moon means just the bottom third or so is available. I think about 28% this evening. Someone in Concord is listening to me. That's always scary. Watch my P's and Q's. Excellent. Camera operators picking out a lovely shot for us here so that we can see around the circuit. One thing that you cannot deny, that from my point of view in the years that we've been coming here, there's a few more bits of spotlighting around the circuit, but the advances in camera technology and the increase in resolution has been an absolute game changer for darkness motor racing in places like Sebring. In the early days of the American Le Mans series, we actively didn't want to do too much darkness racing because all you could see was headlights coming towards the camera for Petit Le Mans and things like that. And nowadays, the cameras see better than your eyes do. It's absolutely extraordinary. It's transformed how we watch motor racing. I'll tell you now that on Saturday night, you are going to be blown away by the pictures. Let's pick up a couple of drivers' eye views as they talk to our CrowdStrike pit lane team. We'll start with Nick Damon.
Down at the number 70 Optimum McLaren, and with Ollie Milroy. We've seen some performance by McLaren already. They've taken the pole positions in the GT4. How is the new GT3 McLaren going?
The new what? Sorry,
how's the new GT3 McLaren performing?
Yeah, really good. Obviously, this is our second year now with the Evo. It was actually here last year when we first ran the Evo on the 720. And we had a strong season. We had a strong run at Daytona. We led for most of the first 15 hours until we had a problem in one of the pit stops. So, yeah, we're really happy. It looks strong this weekend. Car feels pretty good. But obviously, we'll see where we are come tomorrow in quali, really, I guess.
So you said you had it here last year. I mean, how much of last year's knowledge is still usable year on after a year's learning with the car and a new tyre?
Yeah, I mean, we're in a very different place with the car now, just from experience, obviously, with setting the car up over the year and learning how the Evo kit works and stuff. So, but definitely from a driver point of view, you know, once you're going back to circuits, you know, time and time again, you dial yourself in a lot quicker, so you can start getting onto the car a lot sooner. So it definitely helps, but also there's a lot of new stuff.
Ollie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to say this with nothing but affection. Elliot's here. You're one of us. You're a nerd like us. How cool is it to be driving Sebring International Raceway at night in an official 12-hour session?
Oh, it's the coolest driving experience I've done by far. Getting to do it in a test about 2 weeks ago was unbelievable. Now getting to do it with everyone out there is just absolutely incredible. To be three wide on the first lap, going for it, headlights flashing. I'm just like, I just want to do this more and more. I'm really bummed they moved it to the 9:45 start. I want that deep into the race. Let's go till 3 a.m. So luckily I'll still get some night running. But yeah, this is just one of those unique experiences that every driver wants, so few get. And so to be able to do it in a Porsche with Wright Motorsport in the favorite car here, it's just the absolute coolest experience I could do.
All right, take out the effect of all the other cool cars out on track with you. How different is it from a test when the lighting is even different coming into the race?
Oh, absolutely it's different. At the test, there's actually a little bit less light, and we were a bit alone out there. So, you know, you almost fly off turn one because you're totally blind on the first time through, hit the brakes on exit. Now with other cars, with dust now in the air, that's just blinding you. You know, I'm a SoCal kid, so I felt like I was racing at Baja for a couple hundred miles every now and then. It is truly a special experience. You know, the track doesn't change. The brake markers are the same, but at times it feels like that track is moving around you. It is a very unique, very old school racing experience that I'm very glad I get to do.
You've been here in so many different cars, but now being in the top category of Porsche that's achievable for most people, does that make it even more of a dream come true?
Oh, this is, you know, 12 years in the making, as I like to say. 12 years ago, MX5 Cup, racing as a Mazda kid with some of my best friends. Then the Carrera Cup and the Conti Tire Series. Staying the whole weekend, spending the entire race in Green Park, just being like, oh, I got to get out there. So to finally do it, to be a 29-year-old rookie is a pretty cool feeling because I feel like I get to appreciate it more than I would at 22, let's say. And I'm just having the absolute time of my life out here while still trying to make our Porsche go as fast as it can.
I don't know if you know this, but Jan Halen, your teammate, along with Adam Adelson, Jan's been on pole here twice in a Wright Motorsport Porsche. Is he going to get to qualify tomorrow?
We'll see with it. You know, it's we have the benefit of having an incredibly fast am.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can play that strategy if we need to. The biggest thing with it is it gives the flexibility. If we want to qualify Jan and have someone who's done that before, go for it. If I want to jump in, sure. If we want to put Adam in, we know he's going to put it right where it needs to be and have a good first stint. So, yeah, we're a little spoiled for choice here, and it's something that we're just very happy about. And, yeah, we'll just play it out to the best we can.
That little bit of enthusiasm was brought to you by Elliott Skier and Wright Motorsport. Thank you for joining us here on IMSA Radio.
Do you know, it's a brilliant point he's made there about understanding and appreciating it more because you've got a bit more experience of life. As my very limited driving career is concerned, it started very, very late and I don't do enough of it. But racing in the dark, I've only done about 3 or 4 darkness races and every single one of them has been brilliant and I wish I'd done more. I did rallying when I was younger, road rallying in particular, mainly as a navigator on the maps. That was cool, but circuit racing in the dark, there's almost something illicit about it, like you shouldn't really be doing it. And having raced in places as in the dark as diverse as Anglesey, very dark indeed, and Cota, also very dark, but a completely different circuit. Although Uppy Downy, both of them Uppy Downy, interestingly enough, it's brilliant. And I've got goosebumps just thinking about it, and Elliott Skier has brought that back to my mind, so thank you very much indeed for that, Elliott. I also want to say a quick thank you as well to King Julian on the Discord chat. I've read what you wrote, that is very kind, and thank you very much indeed for asking that I could see that. It's been put in front of me, so thank you to the responsible adult for firing that in, and to all on the Discord group, thank you for all your support. We know how much you guys and girls put into this sport in terms of how much time you spend watching and listening. And we love to see your comments. Can't always be good, we know that. And we like the constructive criticism as well. But thank you for your support because you follow this sport so generously and so totally. And it is a sport where time, it's not something you can do for 5 minutes, is it? You get drawn into it. Also, as I said today in the MX5 races, I know you love the short MX5 races as well, so thank you for the continued support of those as well. We're 39 minutes to go. Nick Tandy is in the Porsche Penske Motorsport at number 6. That's the fastest car at the moment, but he's lead has just been cut to about half a second as Renger van der Zander has just turned the fastest lap of the 01 gold fronted Cadillac. with a 150.331. We'll watch the times whilst our CrowdStrike pit lane team go to work, and Nick Damon has more.
I'm down with Jared Andretti on the 43, the Porsche. Jared, how has the day gone? It didn't start well. You lost most of this morning's session, didn't you?
Yeah, we lost most of the morning session. It's been this place is tough to come to. We knew, obviously, new car for us. We didn't get a chance to test after Daytona, so it's just been working through those things. So it's a long race, though, and we have a lot of time to kind of sort things out there.
It seemed to be was it a pedal box problem this morning?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Was it a problem with the pedal box this morning?
Yeah, it looked like something like that. Yeah, and so they just. I guess it's a problem that's happened on a couple other Porsches, and so we sorted it out and moved on.
I mean, I think I was chatting to Shay, the other pit lane reporter, about your team, and she said the one thing that characterises your team seems to be in bad luck. Do you think you've managed to shake that off?
I certainly hope so. I mean, we've been at it for a while. I'm usually not a believer in luck or anything like that, but it seems like we've had a couple bits of it. I feel like we got some good luck at Daytona, albeit only a ninth place, but you know we survived and all that. So hopefully we can make some improvements, chip away at it this year, and have some good runs.
And are you confident with the reliability? Because obviously it's about car preparation, and these bumps will shake any looseness out, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident. The guys are doing a great job at the shop. Obviously, it's a Porsche; they're known to run forever. So I feel like we'll be there at the end. Where we'll be, you know, I think guys will do a great job on the lane. Hopefully we get the car in a little bit of window. We got 36 minutes left, and then we go from there.
All right, thank you.
Oh, 36 minutes left, he said. that's going to be the fuel run for the GT3 cars. Unbelievable onboard pictures from, I think that's the Cadillac 01. Yeah, it is, with Rengen van der Zande behind the wheel. Are you going to love this at the weekend? We get the joy of seeing these pictures in the booth and on the big screens around the track at this time of a Thursday evening. That was like a police chase with Rengen van der Zande carving his way through a couple of LMP2 cars like they didn't exist. And they were having a battle of their own on the circuit, having a bit of play. Which is fine, because you need to know where you can go, where you can't go at this time of the evening. But Rengen was taking no prisoners there, Jeremy.
He wasn't, was he? And that was his I think that was his best lap. Moved him up into second position. You talked about just a few minutes ago in that 0-1 car. Some improvements also in LMP2. Ben Handley went to the top a couple of laps ago in number 2 United Autosports entry. And now on this last lap, Felipe Fraga up to second in the Riley number 74. It's the car that was right up the sharp end this afternoon. The 52-0, he was fastest in the second session, but quickest time of the day in LMP2 was set earlier in the first session by Mikkel Jensen in car number 11 at a 151.3. Best time in this session, a 152.5 then for Ben Handley.
Three turn one with Nick Tandy. Car riding the bumps reasonably well, and Nick obviously clearly at one with that number 6 Porsche 963. Past the palm trees, turns into turn 3. Breaking point is 6 palm trees along, he told me earlier on. No, I'm only kidding.
Yeah, exactly. You want to hope they don't turn lights out on that particular one.
Yeah. I had a conversation. This is a genuine conversation from a few years ago with Ollie Gavin at Le Mans, just after he'd finished driving, and he came and did a couple of stints with us on Radio Le Mans, and he was talking about reading off the stats on the screen, so revs and stuff like that, at a certain part on the Mulsanne Straight. And there's on the Mulsanne Straight on driver's right, there's a bricolage, a DIY, sort of like a warehouse type thing. Like, yeah, exactly, like a Lowe's, a do-it-yourself store. And it has a big green horse outside. And so the Corvette guy said, right, at the big green horse, read off, you know, your revs, etc., etc. It was right in between the two chicanes. So Ollie's telling this story on the air, and Sam Collins, now working for F1 TV as their one of their analysts, was also in the booth. That was my two guests at the time. And Sam said, you know, they take that horse in every night and put it back in every morning. And Ollie went, what? He went, yeah, it's never in exactly the same place. And he went, oh my God, that's years of Corvette data that has been absolutely blown out the water. They thought it. It was a big old thing, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't just a normal size horse. It was like a Trojan horse style thing, you know, 15, 20 feet high. But what nobody realised was it was on rollers and it was getting dragged back in at night time. So no drunken Brits, I'm sure, could nick it and take it back to the campsite. And so it was getting moved between every session. And so I'm 9-8 now. That's excellent, 9-8. Oh, that's another 200 revs than what you were doing. Of course, the horse was another 10 metres further down the bullseye. So talking about using things that aren't going to move. Somebody once told me about breaking in the shadow for the bridge at Brands Hatch. And I'm like, yeah, very funny. Very funny indeed. But that's the best one ever. And that goes back a few years. And it was Sam Collins and Ollie Gavin at the start of their broadcast careers who combined to me. I couldn't speak. I literally couldn't speak. I had exactly the same reaction as you've just had there, Jeremy. Just coming up to 30 minutes left, and we've still got 46 cars on the track at the moment. Lamborghini SC63 going to the left of the Iron Dames car, sparking massively on the bumps there as it went offline, passing the 83. That was one of the Porsches in behind it, which is still behind it. Is that Tandy that's behind them at the moment, or is it the number 5 car? Check that as I see them come through. Another car that I saw that was running very low earlier on and sparking from the front was the Korthoff Mercedes, throwing out sparks for fun. EO Racing's number 99 Origas just done its best lap of the race under the control of Paul Loup Chatin. Paul Loup with an Alpine WEC drive to his name now has come right through all the prototype ranks in ACO Racing. And also Charlie Eastwood putting in the best time for Tower Motorsports. Now, let's pick up on a few cars that had problems earlier on. Shea Adam, give me some good news.
I'm almost down to Sean Creech Motorsport, and their pit box is full, and the best news is their pit board is actually waving. Johnny Edgar was the guy who needed to get a few laps in, and I'm going to see if I can dive in here with Lance Wilsey. Lance, do you mind if I bug you really quickly?
Not at all.
We've come back to a track where you are a winner. 2022, the Sebring 12 Hours, you guys were victorious. Same team, very different car. How is this Ligier handling the bumps?
Well, I mean, I think the car is doing reasonably well. I think we're a little behind the eight ball just because of the lack of testing that we had coming into this. But, you know, we're making slow, steady progress. I mean, it's a very different car than the P3 was and things. That's for sure. But, you know, we're making slow, steady progress. I'm hoping we can take one more big swing at it tonight, and then I'll see what I can do in qualifying tomorrow. But overall, you know, pleased with the package, just a lot of work to do. Not a lot of development done in the last many years, so we're doing the best we can as fast as we can.
You said it's a big step. Is it a good step? Do you feel more comfortable in this car?
You know, but by big step, I it's a completely different car to drive. And again, I'm not as comfortable yet. I mean, I spent 5 years and did, you know, tens of thousands of laps in the P3 across multiple series. I will get there. I have no doubt about that. But just with the tough weather in Florida in the fall, the repaving at Daytona, we lost about half our test days. Not to make excuses, we're doing the best we can, and we'll continue to keep our heads down and push really hard, and, you know, we'll be there in the end.
Yeah, you will, and especially with Joao Barbosa by your side. Do you know he's one of the guys with the lowest DNF rate of anyone in IMSA history? It's very impressive, and I'm glad that you've continued to partner with him. What's it like to share a car with Joao Barbosa?
Well, I mean, there's a reason I partner with him. I mean, first and foremost, I would say he's an outstanding human being as well as being just a great driver. And, you know, for somebody like me in the twilight of my career, to put it mildly, you know, to have somebody with his experience, his knowledge, his ability to translate that knowledge into a practical application on the track, I mean, it's priceless, especially taking on a new project like this, you know, P217 car that hasn't been run competitively in years. So, in all honesty, if I didn't have him at my side, I'm not sure I would have went forward with this, because he's a huge asset to the successes we'll inevitably have.
On behalf of IMSA fans everywhere, thank you for continuing to bring him back. Good luck to you guys this weekend.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
Just at the pit lane, it's the 24 BMW car, and Jesse Kron just out of the machine. How much progress have BMW made today with the new hybrid?
I mean, every time we're out there, we move forward with the car. Obviously, we still have some work to do. We haven't topped the timesheets once so far, so that's what we aim to be. Obviously, the race is what matters, and so far we're quite happy with how the car feels, especially in night conditions.
The car seemed to make a big leap forward at the end of last year. Do you think you've managed to carry the momentum on here in IMSA?
Hard to say, really. I mean, everybody's taking a step forward. It's basically a development race. So we know that we've improved, but so have all the others. So we just have to see where we are in qualifying tomorrow.
In such a heavily homologated class, how can you develop? What are you developing, you know, which you're allowed to develop? And how are you improving the car race by race?
There's a lot of things that we can do on the system side, TC, brake-by-wire, and just in general, all the systems in the car. It's a very complicated car. So when we get all these systems fine-tuned and talking well with each other, then that's when we can really unlock the speed.
So the difference between now and when the car rolled off the truck in Daytona a year and a half ago, a year and a month ago, is just you've got the electronics working better. Is that really what it is?
That's basically it. Like, that's where the biggest development is. Obviously, we've brought some aero flicks and little stuff like this, but definitely the biggest thing is just getting the systems to work well.
You've had the car out in all the temperatures so far today, and now it's cooling down again. Is it looking particularly sweeter at any temperature range?
Well, obviously, the race is going to finish in cold night conditions, so that's what we got to aim to have the car the best at. It also seemed to work quite well in warmer temperatures, which was a good sign. So overall, I think we have a good package.
And of course, the thing that separates all the cars, despite being the same, is the tyres. And tyre wear is really going to come into this one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you got to double stint most of the tyres. So the car that can take care of the tyres the best is obviously going to have a huge advantage. That's what we're keeping in mind as well. It's a 12-hour race, so qualifying, it's sometimes better to compromise a little bit to have a best possible race car.
How care? Obviously, if you're starting from a aim really just looking after the rubber, I mean, how careful are you going to have to be? How much, you know, we see in Formula 1 they're driving 7 seconds a lap off what they could do to save the tyres. I mean, obviously it's not as extreme, but will you be a couple or 3 seconds off what you could get out of the tyres to keep them in shape?
I mean, the biggest thing is not to take everything out of it when you have the peak, so leave a little bit on the table then, and obviously avoid lockups at all costs, because that can throw the whole strategy out of the window. It's just a matter of driving as smooth as you can. You don't really have to like massively give up on the pace. The tire seems to be good enough to do double stint if you're somewhat sensible with it.
I'm sure you're sensible, Jesse. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Really instructive there from Jesse Kron, and a big lock up for the number 7 Porsche down at turn 7 a moment or two ago. Felipe Nasr is 10th of the GTPs at the moment. Now, I will put in the caveat that we don't know what the run plan is for that car, but let me also tell you that the Lamborghini SC63 is 7th and is a second, 1.2 seconds quicker than that Porsche Penske Motorsport machine. And we have had two new fastest laps whilst Nick Dearman was doing that interview with Jesse Kron, because first Tom Blomqvist for Wheel and Cadillac at 31 went to the top with a 49.755. That lasted all of about 25 seconds before Renger van der Sender said, look, if it's going to be a Cadillac in the front, it's got to be me. I've got gold. I'm wearing gold. Gold means number one. And it's a 149.179 for van der Sender. So two Cadillacs now, Jeremy, at the front of the field.
Yes, indeed. That changed very rapidly there, didn't it? Now, we just 23 minutes remaining in the session. Also a change just now in GTD Pro. It's the number one Paul Miller Racing BMW that goes to the top. Neil Verhagen at the wheel of that car at the moment, the BMW junior driver. A 201.109 for him. That bumps the Corvette that Nicky Katzberg had put at the top of GTD Pro down to second position. Just ahead of the AO Racing Porsche, it's Lauren Heinrich who set that time, and Seb Priaulx driving it at the moment. But fastest of all of the GTD cars remains the number 47 Cetelar Ferrari, with Antonio Fuoco back at the wheel of that car now, having set the fastest time very, very early in this nighttime session.
At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch before the end of this session or across the weekend, thank you to all of you who are clearly tuning in from around the US and around the world, also on 100.9 FM here at Sebring International Raceway. A quick reminder, on Saturday for the race, Sirius XM 206 across North America, if you're suitably equipped, as it were, and here in the Central Highlands region of Florida, we will be taking off the airwaves of the sports voice here in this part of the world. Highlands ESPN 1063 AM also taking our broadcast. That doesn't affect the 100.9 FM either here at Sebring International, but if you've got friends who are slightly further away, or maybe you haven't brought an FM radio with you, but you've got the ability to tune in on AM 1063 is where you need to be. And thanks to everybody down there at the radio group, WOJ 99.1, Highlands Best Country, by Fast Foster and the rest of the team, always been great supporters of this event for as long as I've been coming here, and taking our commentary again this year. Oh, big spin out on the circuit. That's a Mustang that's gone around. The distinctive rear lights tell me that, but which one? It's the 65 car that is sideways to the track at turn 16, coming onto the back straight, being lit up by the headlights of the cars following it around. And that is Dirk Müller. It's not very often we see Dirk make a mistake. I'm writing this one down in my diary. He's just off the circuit for the three times winner here, and seems like he's trying to get the big V8 refired, the Coyote Mortner. It's a stop block when it goes to Malcolm Wilson at M Sport over in Cumbria in the northwest of England, and those guys work their magic on it, take it out from 5.0. Nice flick turn on the grass. Well, all the RVs on that side got a good view of that.
Good ear full of that as well.
Yeah, mouthful of that actually.
They're probably true.
So Dirk kept the, or got the engine running again. I just think he came round and he was half a car's width, maybe a little more, offline. And then got a little bit of a swapper on, actually, as the left-hand side Michelin's dropped over the curbs. It looked like he'd saved it. Yeah. And then it snapped to the left-hand side. Don't think there's anything broken, but he'll bring the 65 Multimatic Mustang into the pit lane for a quick check over. Shea Adam is at that end of the pits. We'll hear from her in a moment.
Yeah, in the meantime, the big rival, Corvette Racing, went to the top in GTD Pro and fastest overall of all the GTD cars.
Wow.
Earl Bamber turns a 2 minutes .790 in the number four Corvette. It was also an improvement for Paul-Loup Chatin to go fastest in LMP2 in the AO Racing car number 99.
He's been working up to that.
Yeah.
He's had a couple of quick laps for himself. Let's go to Shea Adam, who is down with Dirty Dirk. Well, at least the car's a bit filthy.
No harm, though, to the externals of the car. That's good news. But the unfortunate news, they've just put the rollers on. This one is done for tonight, and we'll be going back to the garage. So hopefully there's no damage to the Ford that Dirk has replied to the team.
Spin for the high-class racing number 20 car. That's the MDK machine in the hands of Seth Lucas, ninth in LMP2. That, I think, was an outlap. Yes, it was for Seth. And that was turn five-ish. Somewhat chastened. Seth steers to the right-hand side of the road down to turn seven, but again, no harm, no foul. Let's head to Lone Star and to Scott Andrews. That was a car that didn't turn very many laps this morning either, but has recovered from that and is now 11th in GTD. It's Rui Andrade who's behind the wheel at the moment. Scott Andrews with Nick Damon for this CrowdStrike Pit Lane Report.
Scott, give me the story of the number 18 Mercedes day, because it's had some good points and some bad points.
Yeah, that's right. So obviously we sort of started a little bit on the back foot. We didn't get to do any testing. Obviously it's a new tyre. It's a new Michelin tyre. It's a really good tyre, but we're still getting our heads around it a little bit. So we had a few just small teething issues with the car early on. Somehow it was creating lift over the bumps, which is not good here. Yeah, so we fixed that, but we also lost a lot of track time. But, you know, the team are amazing. And I think, obviously, what we shoot at Daytona by running in the top three most of the time is just a massive testament to the team. And this team never quits, and neither do the drivers. So hopefully we're at the pointy end come quali. And, I mean, things are pretty good. You just never know where people are with fuel loads and tyres and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just happy to be here, happy to be racing, living my dream. And, yeah, just super thankful to be with the boys from Texas.
Well, why not? But it's, just to go back to the issues, obviously car causing lift is not a racing car supposed to do. Was that because the setup was way out, or because something had been bolted the wrong way around or not quite put in properly?
No. No, the boys wouldn't bolt anything the wrong way around, but actually just the engine tray started coming loose, so it was just sort of gaping in air as I went over the bumps, and just in a weird way was, not exactly pushing the front down. And, we obviously were pretty close with the setup, but not perfect as well. So, I mean, that's always going to happen. And obviously this track, it's like a living creature. It's ever-changing, so... Anyway, we're chipping away at it, and hopefully we're there by the end of the 12-hour race next week, on Saturday.
Next week, you'll be very late tomorrow. Yeah. I'm wrong as well, so it's Saturday.
I'll be happy to be here next week. It's a great track.
And the weather's fantastic. But on a serious point, I mean, we hear a lot about this new Michelin, the new tyre, the first time you've been on it. I mean, for a lay person like myself, what is the difference between the old tyre and the new tyre?
Well, that's a great question. Every track we go to, we're finding a similar but different challenge to come across. So it basically, so the sidewall's a little bit different, the profile's a bit different, and basically what that does is affects how the energy is put through the car, bumps, and any force that the driver puts into the car. So we're just trying to get our head around that, and obviously that's a massive difference. And the tire is what keeps the car, what glues the car to the racetrack, right? So it's the biggest part. So if we get the tire in the window and working in synchrony with the car, then we'll be good. And you know, the Mercedes is always strong, especially at the end of the race. We probably don't have the best. I don't want to talk about BOP, but we're probably not the quickest car outright, but we should be pretty good on the long run, especially if we sort out our setup. So, yeah, I'm excited and, keen to go fight for the Lone Star boys.
Scott, well done. Good luck for the race, mate.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Scott Andrews, Lone Star Racing, number 80, AMG. It's not as if they had to tear up all their setup sheets because they didn't have any for this championship. Only done it race or so before, maybe levelling the playing field. I suppose even with the changes to that Michelin, at least you've got a starting point if you've been to the tracks before. Big flames coming out of the side of the number 99, that spike, the AO Racing LMP2 on the downshift and the upshift. Actually, I've just noticed it's got past me on the start finish line. That's very impressive. I don't know whether it has any performance advantage or disadvantage, but it looks fabulous in the evening time, particularly on the downshift. Looks like the Batmobile as it's changing down. Great stuff. out through turn four at the moment. No change in the top times. Let me look for some improvements. Paul de Rester has just improved the time for the United Autosports number 22, a 153 flat for that car. It's good enough for eighth in LMP2. Paul was testing the LMP2s at Imola for ELMS on Sunday and Monday, telling me at Cheffers for dinner just how quick the new LMP2 spec for Europe is. They've not gone back to the full power that they used to have. They're still about 30 or so horsepower down, but they are allowed to use full downforce on that car now. And he was having a lot of fun driving past the Porsche Penske Motorsport 963s, and he said that P2 car is absolutely incredible now it's been restored to almost how it was designed. So can't wait to see those times. Looks like the ELMS lap records will be taking a pasting this year. Shit, Adam, we asked you to find out about Acura and Wayne Taylor. You have gone to the Oracle. What's the situation?
I've actually gotten the Oracle Junior to give me the answer. That would be one of the Taylor brothers who came up with the very disappointing answer of it's an engine change for the number 40. That is the reason that the car is now not on the track. It is not by choice. So Ricky letting me in on a little bit of a, well, not very much a secret. The work is going on in the garage and everyone can see it back there. We've just been in the pit lane and not walked out that direction. But that's what's happening. The number 10 has done limited laps. They've been working on a lot of different setup changes. They just actually tried changing ride height and shocks. So going for a different calibration, because everybody, when they tested here, it wasn't this hot, and that is making a very big difference.
No penalty for an engine change in this championship at this stage of the weekend, except the fact that you're missing the timeout on track when you need to be setting the car up. Only thing I would say that mitigates that is they've got a second car, so they are getting some data.
I tell you what, they'll be really grateful to have that second car here for the first season, at least. They're running two cars for a while for Wayne Taylor Racing with Andretti, and that problem apparently, I'm told, manifested itself towards the end of the earlier session this afternoon, and they just haven't got it all buttoned up yet to go out again for this session. So yeah, a lot of time lost then for the number 40 car, but there was an improvement from the number 10 car of Philip Albuquerque. Also improvements there for Augusto Farfus, who's jumped up into second position behind Sebastian Bourdais, so splitting the two Cadillacs in number 24 BMW M Hybrid V8. A 1 minute 49.437 then for the Brazilian against Bourdais' 49.179.
And Mikkel Jensen moving up to second with TDS in the LMP2. Flex box number 44. Aston off the circuits on the back straight. Coming onto the back straight and has pitted immediately. Again, huge swathes of dust being thrown up behind that car, which has made it back to the pits. Andy Lally behind the wheel of Magnus Racing. There's another driver who doesn't make mistakes. We have Dirk Müller off at 16. Andy Lally looked like he dropped off at 16 as well, unless there was something more sinister, and perhaps that is a car that's had a puncture. We'll get Shea to find out. A couple of little races breaking out on the circuit, Jeremy, in the last 9 minutes or so of this final free practice session, because next session for these cars is qualifying. That's their only session tomorrow, and then the session after that is the race with no warm-up. So this is the last free practice session of the week for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship cars.
It is, and we talked about a little while ago, number 13 AWA Corvette hadn't done many laps. Who was it? Which was those two? Two LMP2 cars, was it?
It was the number two United car,
okay,
and I think that was a GTP car that it was alongside, which may have been one of the BMWs from the rear late signature. Okay. Wasn't a Porsche for sure.
But, we were talking about the AWA number 13 Corvette that hadn't turned many laps. It turned 8 laps, I think, a while ago. And then not too long ago, Lars Kern did a few laps in that car. Now Matt Bell has been dispatched in the number 13 car. And he's just turned that car's best lap in this session. So the good news is you're going to have about 10 minutes at the wheel of that car in the closing moments of this hour and a half session. So the only car we haven't seen is that number 40 Acura. Philip Albuquerque there improves again there,
yeah,
in the sister car up to third position now for Albuquerque, a 149.644.
And Lelo Wadu as well going quickly. It was a Cadillac. It was the 31 Cadillac. So it was Pipo Durrani that was side by side at the hairpin. No, turn 10 for the number two machine.
Ben Hanley driving number two for United.
So.
Yeah, wow.
Lilo Wadu, as I say, Lilo Wadu Ducellier is as her full name is. 154.4 for the Richard Biel. Number 88, Oreca in LMP2, good enough for 13th position. Nick Damon, down in the pit lane, has plotted up where, Nick?
I'm at the 47, it's a Cheslar Racing Ferrari, it's Antonio Fuoco. Antonio, and top of the timing sheet, so obviously the Cheslar car going well.
Yeah, I think it was a smooth session for us. We did our quali sim early on the session, and it was pretty okay. For sure the competitors are quite close and even faster, so we need to try to do our best tomorrow and see what we can do on quali.
How much have you been changing the car during the course of the day to match the temperatures, or have you just decided to set it for this evening's temperatures for tomorrow?
I mean, this morning was quite critical for the condition, but then we know during the race we go through the night, so we need to find a good balance between day and night, and I think our car looks quite okay during the night, so we will see on the race.
So what sort of things are you changing to get the balance to be better towards evening? What are the things that are different?
Yeah, we work a bit on the setup, and then obviously on the tyre it's a bit difficult because, you know, when it's quite warm it's easy to overheat the tyre, so we try to keep it cool and try to do our best.
Is it just pressures, or do you have to think about things like caster and camber as well?
We tried many things, and for sure with the hot temperature the pressure goes really high, so we need to understand how we can manage it, how we can manage the tires on the hot condition, and survive the first hours and then push to the end.
Antonio, thank you.
Thank you.
No, I've got to say, Nick and Shea in our Crowdstrike pit lane reports asking a lot of technical questions and the drivers giving answers. Yeah. I really, really like this. I'm finding out a lot. We have to speculate. It's not like we don't know how to set up a car, of course. We've been around the sport enough, and Nick's done plenty of RC racing himself, and that the preceptor and concept are exactly the same. However, it's really good to hear the drivers being prepared to share what they've been doing and what they're trying out. Thank you to the teams and the drivers, as ever, for superb access and for their candour and a bit of humour as well at times. It's been very, very entertaining. Yeah. Not dry PR speak. It's been really good. So to the teams, the manufacturers who allow their drivers to do that, and the drivers themselves, yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much indeed for this busy day today. Winding down the last 4 minutes and 20 seconds, Jeremy, and we'll keep an eye because there are one or two faster times coming in. Conor DeFilippi in the 25 BMWs got down to a 50.3. That's 6th position for GTP.
New fastest time in LMP2 as well,
yes,
Mikkel Jensen. You talked about him going fast in a TDS car. Uh-oh.
Turn 17 has claimed a victim, and it is the CrowdStrike by APR04, Colin Brown. How many drivers? What is Ted Knight cursed? there's damage to the right rear of that car. Colin re-fired it and then thought better of it. This will be a red flag, and I suspect it will end the session here. The left rear corner is deranged. The bodywork's pulled off. The marker light at the back is not attached anymore. How many top flight, normally mistake-free drivers tonight have we said, well, that's unusual. Put that down in the diary. Well, that may well be the ultimate. Dirk Müller and Colin Brown. Wow. Checkered flag and red flag together. So race control realising that there won't be a chance to get through. Oh, trying to go down the inside of a thinker. Well, the flex box. Aston Martin, excuse me.
Which was going very slowly.
Wow, just...
Or was it?
Wow. I don't think so. I think just coming off... Colin just coming offline and trying to trail break into the first part of 17. Maybe just got his left-hand side Michelin's dirty on the exit of turn 16. Did that play a part as he ran across the dirt there in the curb? The closing speed was massive on that flex box car.
Did he have a problem with that car?
Colin, than the 44.
Either the 44 car was sort of slowing to come into the pit, in which case he was on a very strange line.
And
who was
Spencer
driving
Pompelli
it?
In the car.
So that's unlikely. He would have been offline, I would have thought. So was there a problem under braking there for Colin Brown? Because, as you say, the closing speed was immense. Right before the... Well, there wasn't an impact to do because Colin threw it to the inside. And I think he missed the Aston Martin, perhaps.
Yeah, Colin's out of the car under his own auspices. He's having a look at the left rear and talking to the AMR safety crew, who are saying, we're going to have to take you to the infield medical centre. That is a big enough accident that you're going to have to be checked over. So work to do for Stuart Cox and the rest of the CrowdStrike by APR team tonight and into tomorrow, although nothing going on the track till just before midday tomorrow, so we've got a relatively late start tomorrow. What have we learned, if anything, Jeremy, from what we've seen tonight? If we look at GTP, Cadillac, BMW, Acura, Cadillac, Porsche, BMW, Porsche, Lamborghini in eighth position, and then the other Porsches following them up. Interesting, but I'm not sure we can say anything definitive.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, I think it's very much an unknown quantity in all of the classes, quite frankly. LMP2, it looks very, very competitive. GTE is always competitive. The Corvette at the front there, that's interesting. They've certainly well shone this weekend. Antonio Fuoco in the GTD non-pro car was quick right at the very, very, very beginning. So really interesting sessions all around. Just go back to the incident for Colin Brown. I happened to cross Dale Coyne this afternoon in the paddock, taking a look around the IMSA paddock. Of course, the IndyCar Series team owner for whom Colin Brown drove last weekend for the first time. And Dale said, look, he was really impressed. Dale's seen a lot of young drivers and given opportunities to lots of young drivers or relatively inexperienced drivers, I guess neither of which is Colin Brown these days, but that was his first IndyCar race last weekend, and Dale was pretty impressed with what he managed to achieve there.
Yeah, absolutely right. And went about it, as you said, Jeremy, you were there. I watched all of the sessions back in the UK on Sky F1 with the timing running alongside it, and I was just super impressed at how he went about it as well. Well, thank you very much to some very important people, all of our marshals and volunteers who've had a very long day today. From our side of things, our camera operators packing up for the night tonight, and also the production staff both here at the track and at Concord, North Carolina. To our CrowdStrike pit lane team of Shea Adam and Nick Damon, my co-commentator Jeremy Shaw alongside me, of course the responsible adult Eve Hewitt. Up in London, it was Hugh and Tim today on a very long shift, but it was worth it. Thursday thunder has now been silenced. We're back for Fast Friday with racing and qualifying for the 72nd edition of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. We'll have that for you in sound and vision, as well as all of the other races, including our Friday main, the Alan J. Automotive Network at 1:20. which will be for the Michelin Pilot Challenge. That's our big race tomorrow with the Porsches racing into the sunset as well. Been a fabulous day. Thanks very much for being with us here on 100.9 FM at Sebring International Raceway. Have a good evening with a reminder to look after yourself and stay hydrated. Alcohol does not hydrate you, by the way. Public service announcement there. If you're leaving us now, please drive safely. Leave the racing to the professionals on the track. My final note of thanks goes to Mike, who has been the voice of Sebring again today, and he will sign off for you on the PA tonight as we say goodnight from Sebring from IMSA Radio.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.